Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Rayos Lenny podcast. I'm your host, Eddie, and joining me, as always, is Patrick Meehan. Pat, back-to-back weeks that we're doing podcasts, now we're back. We're officially back. First of all, before we get into everything, how are you doing? How's everything? How's everything?
Yeah, like you said, first, it's good to start with the consistency again. I know it's been a crazy year overall in every single sense, but it's good to have the podcast back and running as usual. And then apart from that, everything good. Just a lot of stuff going on. It's almost like my days are being nonstop. So, I mean, it's cool, but obviously, it's tiring. So that last week with El Clásico going on, that we have it on Bein Sports, you can imagine. And then, this week in theory is a little easier, but there's still a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And the reason I kind of want to keep it consistent now, because I actually during the match against Mazatlan that we'll get to in a bit, so I was like interacting with somebody that started following us, or somebody retweeted us. I think it was Food Mex Nation, the Twitter account, and yeah. They do all the Liga MX, but mostly the Mexican national team. They retweeted one of the, I think that was at the Aviles gifts, and someone who started following Monterrey because he's a Spurs fan, and because of Vincent Janssen didn't know like there was like content in English, so that was like a eye opener, and so it kind of like just those like little comments, even with like one person, kind of makes you realize that there's like people who might want this that don't know it exists, and so stuff like that. I'll send you that conversation, Pat, after the podcast, so you could take a look at it. But
for sure.
Yeah, let's get into the two games. Let's start off with the Copa MX first leg final against Cholos. Really not. I mean, the two things that kind of came away with it were the goal from Nico Sanchez, penalty kick as per usual, and a lot. They're putting, obviously the Copa MX, you need to put in a lot of young players, and one of the young players made a really stupid mistake that I hope he's going to learn from. But Pat, did you watch any of the game? How much did you get to watch? Because I mean, it was a good game. I wouldn't say. I mean, I would have liked for Monterrey to. I would have liked a more convincing win. Before the second leg, you don't want to. I mean, Cholos isn't very good, but still, you kind of want to. Put your foot on their throat and not give them any life heading into the second leg. But how much did you watch? What did you expect? What were your expectations? I should say. But yeah, just give me your overall thoughts of this match.
No, yeah, I watched it, and like you said, I mean, it was good to win away from home in a final. That's always good, of course. And then coming back to Monterrey and try to finish it off. But like you said, I expected more of a convincing win. It's good that it's with, a rotated squad with Edson Gutierrez, with Platanito Alvarado, with Ponchito González, with Daniel Parra, who ended up being sent off. But, a lot of these players that don't normally play, and they still got the win. And then there's obviously more. Then you have players from the bench that came in, but there were still some, like Shahir Mohamed played, Eric Cantu played. So it's good to see a rotated squad that can still get W's, even though it's not the prettiest of them. But, I mean, like I think we said in the last podcast, I'll do that all day. I mean, trade a good play for results for sure.
So just by looking at the players that got started, let me just run out the starting 11 really quick. In the back line, it's a back line of five, and I know this is part of my question. It was Daniel Parra, Cesar Montes, Sebastian Vegas, Nico Sanchez, Edson Gutierrez. In the midfield, you had Maxi Mesa, Matias Carenavitar as the DM. And on the other side, Ponchito González. I think it was a two-striker formation between Platano Alvarado and Rogelio Funes Mori. But the back line, Pat, it was a back line of five. My guess is that they learned from their first encounter against Cholos, where Fabian Castillo pretty much shredded their back line. Mostly, you know, Nico Sanchez was the victim of his dribbles. But what do you make of, you know, having a back line? I know some people on Twitter are always like, you know what, I don't like it, just because we have all this offensive talent, we shouldn't be protective so much, you know. So what did you make of this back line of five, and when Turco goes with the back line of five, are you a fan of it, or do you prefer having another player, you know, try to contribute offensively, or what, you know, what are your overall thoughts on just playing a back line of five as he did against Cholos?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that exactly, the exact same thing with the offensive firepower that you have, you might as well go up. But we've seen it before when we go up and we try to create a lot of chances, we miss them. And then you can also say, look at the defensive firepower we have, because we have great defenders, right? So I think that you can look at it both ways. Obviously, an offensive lineup and you know, team and structure is more exciting, you know, for viewing purposes. But I mean, I'm not opposed to it at all. I think we have three great center backs, with Nico Sanchez being Nico Sanchez. He's still, like, with the five defender, you know, he might do some mistakes, but we got other four guys that can do it better. And then the right back and the left back, whoever plays it, I mean, we have a rotation that's, you know, elite in Mexican football. So I think you can also look at that way, you know. So
I'm going to touch on that part, Pat, just what you did, what you touched on, because I guess I'll talk about that when I transition over to the Mazatlan game. But because we saw in one game, Mohamed or Monterrey can throw Funes Mori, and then in another game, they can throw two quality, you know, strikers in Vincent Janssen. They also have Aquiloba too. So, but we'll get to that in a bit. But no, to continue with your point, I just wanted to touch on, because that's something I wanted to talk about too.
Oh yeah, I think what I wanted to say, just to finish it off, goes and continues the other point I made before, where if we're getting results, I'll take it, even if it's not the prettiest of them. And we'll touch on it a little bit more for the Mazatlan game, but I'll trade in the bad or the good play for results, because when we play good, we don't get results either, you know, or we didn't. So I'm not as opposed to it, especially because I know we can. This team concedes every single game, but I know if we focus a little bit more on defense without throwing everybody to the offensive side, then maybe we can stop that floodgate.
And this was the first time, I guess if you want to call it, all season, that Monterrey has pitched a shutout. They didn't allow for Tijuana to get a goal. So, you know, I don't know how you feel about that, Pat. I'm not, like, that's not that. Just get the 3 points. I don't care how it's done at this point, especially at you know, the season's about to end. Just all I want is for the team to go playing well, which they're doing. They've won 1, 2, 3, 4. They've won 4 in a row, obviously against teams that they should beat. But you know, they've had a problem with this. You know, they've had a problem with this. They struggled to get 3 points against, you know, squads that they should easily dominate. We saw it against who was it? It's blanking on me, but it was those matches that were leading up to the Clásico Regio. That I thought, I was literally saying, I think they're gonna walk away with 3 points. Cholos, that was one of them that they lost. I was thinking they were gonna go in there, get 3 points, but they ended up losing. So it's good to see that they're picking up W's against teams that they should be beating. Like, you know, just 1 point isn't enough for me. You should be beating the Querétaros, the Pueblas, the Cholos, these teams who are outside of the Liga and near the bottom. Like, take care of business, because that's what you're supposed to do. That's what good teams do. Let me talk about a specific player, Pat. That previous encounter with Cholos, Matias Calanavita was kind of getting some flack because, you know, he was kind of getting sliced up. And like, I mean, in that first game, I thought he was like the only midfielder in the midfield because Charly Rodriguez was playing too high up for my liking, especially, you know, they went with the formation that was a doble cinco, double five, two defensive mids. So I thought he was getting too much, you know, criticism for that. But against Cholos this go around, he was really good. Like, obviously, a defensive midfielder isn't sexy. Like, that's not a sexy position. But he had five interceptions, three tackles, two clearances, won five of his seven duels. And that's what you kind of expect. That's what you kind of expect from a defensive midfielder. You're expecting him to block passing lanes, disrupt passing lanes, you know, just be that extra blanket for the back line. And he did that against Cholos. The only thing I would like to see him improve a little bit, maybe, is his passing, just because he was at 71%. I would like to see that improved. But that's just me nitpicking. I thought he had a really quality game. I don't know who stood out to you, Pat. Who's another player that stood out to you against Cholos last week?
No, yeah, like you said, Canavida, I think was good in that sense. I think he had a very complete game. I don't know. I mean, Nico Sanchez obviously always gets good grades, to put it that way, because he scores. But I think apart from that, you know, it's a really whatever game for him. I'm not sure. I think Platanito Alvarado had a good game until maybe like the middle of the second half where it stopped. I think Daniel Parra also had a good game, obviously, until the red card. But I think he was doing actually a really good job. I mean, a lot of clearances and a lot of, you know, possession won. And I also like his intensity, something I, you know, you can't see in the stat sheet, but you feel like he's like trying his hardest. So it was good to see the two of the youngsters really stood up for him.
Yeah. So let's just get to that Parra mistake, because there was two red cards from both sides. The first one was obviously it was Daniel Parra. Kicked a Cholos player in his, you know, groin area with the referee right there. Like, he did it right in front of the referee. What was your reaction when you saw that? Because I kind of got upset, because I think it was, let me pull that out. It says here he played 74 minutes. So it was around the 70th minute mark. So, that occurred. So, you're only up a goal. They were creating chances. Cholos were creating chances. They just weren't finding the back of the net. And there was a couple instances where Monchis Cardenas was making some good saves. But to do that, you know, to put your teammates in a position where they're trying to get a result, and you just give the opposition, you know, an advantage for a significant amount of time. It's like maybe about roughly 20 minutes if you add in like stoppage time. It's a learning lesson. But what did you make of it, Pat? Because a lot of people were grilling him on Twitter.
I mean, a stupid decision to kick. I guess the intensity I was talking about also translated to that. Stupid decision. But I wasn't as pissed off as a lot of people were calling him like an idiot and all that. Because, I mean, that always happens. A red card doesn't necessarily mean you're like a bad player or anything. Because after that, I saw a lot of people saying like, he sucks. No, I mean, he had a good game. He's a young dude that's playing in a final. He's starting in a final. Even if it's a Copa Mekis, I mean, these players have chances, and very limited chances. And they take it and they play with all their heart. And it was a stupid decision. But like every single player in the world has one. So wasn't as mad. I wasn't as mad. I think we talked about it in the last podcast. I don't remember a clean win in a long time. like without an injury, without a red card. It's just like normal.
Yeah, at this point, we expect something like this. Let's make this transition to the Mazatlan game. Before we do that, I should say that the Copa MX return leg will be next week, in Monterrey, and you know Monterrey has the opportunity to win a treble. You know, weird as it may be, they're the reigning Liga MX champions, the reigning CONCACAF champions, and you know they can add a domestic cup to their cap. And yeah, whether people might not like it, whether whatever you want to call it, it's a treble.
Yeah, it is.
But let's transition over to the Mazatlan game, unless you have anything else that you wanted to add from that match against Cholos, because it wasn't... These games haven't been sexy. They've won. I mean, the last couple of games, you know, against Querétaro and Puebla, they kind of gave you something. Against Cholos, they were just trying to get it in there and get a favorable result. Just, you know, try to be better than what they were the last time they were in Tijuana. And not get carved up, but you know they walked away with the 1-0 win. But nothing else that you wanted to add from that match?
No, we can go to the next one.
So, like the game against Cholos, a lot of young players, and I kind of want to transition to that before we get into you know all the nitty gritty stuff. What do you make of some of these young players because they're getting minutes? Obviously, with the FIFA break, you have injuries. There's the Liguilla looming, so you kind of want to rest some players just to have the most healthiest squad heading into that, depending on, you know, I'm hoping they can finish in that top four. I think that top four gets a bye week, if I'm not mistaken.
First is like a little wild card, to say it in English. It's called repechaje, but... like a wild card, and then they go and join the other four.
I would prefer they finish in that top four, just because of the amount of injuries. You have Stefan Medina out, you have Charlie Rodriguez, you know, recovering from COVID. You have other players that might not, you know, Dorlan Pavon's coming back. So you have like a lot of players still in that. You know, they could use a week off for the most part. Or, you know, have that week off. It doesn't hurt to try to have as much healthy bodies as they can. But like I was saying, a lot of young players. And I kind of wanted to ask you, I think we're at the tail end, I think, of the like Cesar Montes, Charlie Rodriguez era, like when it comes to like players who've come up from the, you know, from the Fuerzas Básicas, the youth academy, whatever you want to call it. Do any of these young players that have kind of, and I know it's kind of hard to judge because it's only one game. There's going to be, you know, butterflies. There's going to be, you know, legs that are just too jittery. So it's I'm not saying, you know, they're not going to make it, but do you see something in some of these young players before we get into like the tactical part of the win against Mazatlan?
Yeah. It's good the minutes that the young players are getting because, you know, we need to add bodies to a rotate. We need a big rotated squad, especially for the Liguilla. If somebody goes down, if somebody gets sent off, we need players. And we just don't need players that have been on the bench all year and then all of a sudden they need their opportunity and they take it. No, you know, players with minutes that feel comfortable with the players they're playing with. And all that. So, for example, I don't know if Craneviter goes down, to put an example. You have Angel Zapata maybe now that can, you know what I mean? Like, have a rotated squad with minutes and so they are not very not oiled tractor. You know what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of rust in it. So I think that was good because you combine the first team with a rotated squad. And I like seeing them. I like seeing this young guy, Shahir Mohamed, even. I think he's been great, or not great, but good. Angel Zapata looks good. Eric Cantu, you know, he's getting minutes. So excited for them, excited for the team, because at the end of the day, like you said, if Cesar Montes leaves, Charlie Rodriguez leaves, we get all their players to get hyped about. And I think they can definitely take spots in the first team like Cesar Montes and Charlie Rodriguez did back in their day.
Yeah, and I kind of want to ask you, if you had to pick one to get behind, because not all of them are going to make it. That's just how soccer works. Like, not all of them are going to make it. We know this. But one, maybe two, that you think maybe in 2-3 years, because obviously Cesar Montes didn't have the impact right away. Like, he was just a tall teenager. And Charlie Rodriguez had to leave to Europe before he came back. And on some of them will flame out. I mean, Jonathan Gonzalez, everybody was high on, and you know, he's like, where is he? I don't even know. So if you had to pick one out of the young players that you've seen that you're going to get behind and you're going to say, okay, I think this kid's going to make it with Monterrey. He'll have an impact. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but in a year or two, like, he's barely a teenager. And I know we expect a lot from teenagers now, because a lot of teenagers can hit the ground running. But I think for me, for like an 18-year-old, 19-year-old to hit the ground running, you kind of have to be special. There's other players that need that development, need that learning curve before they can hit the ground running. So out of all the young players that you kind of seen, which one gives you the most hope that they can be a part of the squad maybe a year from now and have a significant impact?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think there's a good bunch to choose from. I liked what I saw from Angel Zapata this 45 minutes he just played against Mazatlan, but obviously I haven't seen him that much. But I think I like that, what I saw. And especially now, if Charlie ends up leaving, I think we have a good other, not replacement in the starting lineup, but, you know, another good guy that we can get in the rotation. Shahir Mohamed, I would love for him to be very successful at Rayados, just because I love stories like that. You know, the dad who was very successful at Rayados, now the son also is very successful at Rayados. That's always a good story. And I mean, and the Mohameds, to put it that way, are a team that loves, are guys that love our team. So I think that's always nice. I know a lot of people, we hate them sometimes and we criticize them a lot sometimes, but you know, I think it's good to have those like family legacies and dynasties in a team. I like those type of stories at least, so it would be cool for him to be great. But I think Zapata is somebody, especially that position, is somebody that I would love for him to grow there.
I'm gonna get behind Plátano Alvarado. I would like to see him succeed, and Zapata. I think Zapata has something. The only thing I wish they could do, and it kind of doesn't allow it just because, you know, the whole Mexican, you know, all this dumb shit. I wish they could loan them out. Like, loan them out, get your experience, like they did with Stefan Medina. Like, here's a loan. Go to Pachuca, get some playing time. We'll figure out, you know, if you're going to be a part of our future. If you like what you see with more responsibilities, et cetera, et cetera. Just because I think that would be beneficial and more, like, you can know if this kid has it, like if you see it. But obviously they can only do it through Copa MX or maybe spot starts here and there, and that's kind of difficult because you can't really get a full, you know, full scouting report, I guess you can say, on a young player. And I'm not going to sit here and say I watch under 19, under 20, whatever matches, because I don't. The only time I see it is maybe a highlight that they put on Twitter. Let's transition over to the game against Mazatlan now, just leaving behind the young players. But again, another team that they should beat. Mazatlan is really bad. I don't know. They're one of the teams I don't really like in Liga MX. Them and Juarez. I don't really like care for them. You know, they can leave or go. But what did you make of the match? I think they only went back four. They went four. I'll say the starting 11. Gallardo at left back, Sanchez and Montes at center back. Cantu got the right back start. In the midfield, you had Shahid Mohamed. On the other side of him, you had Miguel Layún, and in the middle, you had Angel Zapata and Cesar Ortiz. Up front, you had Vincent Janssen getting the start, and Aviles Hurtado. What did you make of this starting 11? What did you make of the match? What stood out to you? Yeah, just give me your overall thoughts.
I loved that Aviles Hurtado got that early goal. That was just a perfect moment. And the team, you know, getting together, hugging each other, and feeling...
How bad is that stadium, Pat? Like, how bad? Like,
well, yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, they had, like, bugs, you know, roaming around.
That's
and
true.
Now their pitch is, like, it has, like, some weird, like, I don't know if they take care of it, but, like, the shot that Aviles, you know, did... I know some people thought that the goalkeeper messed up. You know, he read it wrong. But if you slow it down, you can see it just takes a weird bounce. And that usually has to do with, you know, your groundskeeper, who I don't know who that is over there. And I don't know if it has to do with, like, the climate. I'm not going to sit here and try to understand, you know, what's the Mazatlan climate, whatever. But, man, that is an awful pitch. Just you know. Yeah, I'm not going to say I don't watch a lot of I don't watch any Mazatlan games. But, we saw, you know, the bug stuff go viral. And it was just, you know, this lucky bounce that Aviles said. He shot it from outside the box. Goalie went for the dive. Goalie went in the right direction. It's just, it took a weird bounce. And like, it just hit, like, some type of, like, bump. And it just went over the goalie. But, yeah, go ahead, Pat. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Yeah, I think the goalkeeper was actually going to save it, but it just bounced. The last bounce that it took, it just moved it over his hand. So obviously good for us, but bad for Miguel Fraga. But good for Aviles. And then I think the game kind of slowed down after like 20 minutes. Mazatlan started to take a little bit more of the possession. And then obviously the end of the half saw Nico Sanchez score another penalty goal.
Which was... And then, awarded from, you know, by, you know, Aviles.
Oh,
you know,
that's right.
That penalty. Yeah. So he had he pretty much had a hand in both goals. If, you know, he just, you know, but
yeah, I think he was good. I think Aviles was good in this game for sure. There's also the second half where I think Mazatlan started to really, really start like firing in all cylinders. They had a lot of opportunities. Obviously, they scored a goal, and then. Monterrey's game was just a little bit of, you know, a little bit of a counterattack and maybe
two goals that were called back. No, I said two goals that were called back, Pat. Two Janssen goals that were called back. One, the first one, man, that would have gone in. Like, he just put some extra, you know, extra mustard on that shot and just went boom. It was like one of those, yeah, you're not gonna stop it, like, or else it's gonna hurt you. And the other one was actually pretty good too. Like, both, there were both quality goals that were called back. The other the first one, Janssen was offside. Like, it was him personally that was offside. And then the other, it was Maxi Mesa, because Maxi Mesa, I think it was a cross, if I'm not mistaken. And Janssen, you know, put the ball in the back of the net, but Maxi Mesa was offside. So that was annulled. What did you make of Janssen's performance? Because people have been wanting to see him. He's had some, you know, he's had to deal with some injuries. He's had to deal with maybe Akiloba leapfrogging him over in the depth chart. What did you make of his performance?
Janssen is a hot mess. He's just like all over the place, a little bit messy, but has his moments. And I like how passionate he is. He looks like he loves his team and everything. He likes to win, like how he celebrates the goals. But he's like a hot mess. I guess.
How would you say? How would you say? I was about to ask you, because people are gonna say, you're gonna say, like, well, what do you mean a hot mess?
I know. I was about to say like something like, I was thinking of how would I describe Janssen, and for some reason, hot mess came into my mind. So I guess he's just all over the place. He fights for the balls. He goes away out of position sometimes to fight for balls and maybe to get balls and start an attack. So that's good. But it's also Messi in a way in where you want him. You want him finishing the chances. And then when he does get chances, he's a good finisher, and we all know that. I mean, he and not only that, but he's very physical and he's good at what he does. That's for
sure.
Yeah,
he was fouled four times through and gave three fouls. So there's the physical aspect of his game. I thought he had an overall good game. He had two goals that were annulled. Obviously, that takes off some of the bright spots in the game for him. But when you look at his stat record, 9 for 3 on ground duels won, 35 touches, lost the ball 12 times, had one shot on target. He had a pretty good game. I mean, obviously, like I said, the goals take away from it a little bit. The goals being annulled take away from it. But overall, I thought it was good. Like, it's good to have, a good rotation where, make what you want of Funes Mori. I know some people are kind of upset, especially because he did miss a goal against Cholos last week. And they have issues with that, some of his misses, whatever. But it's good to have, players where, okay, I'm going to put in someone else and the quality, of the player doesn't drop. That's we can still expect the same thing. So, I thought he was pretty good. I think that was it from that part. Anything else you wanted to add from that? Or forgive me, Pat. I want to talk about Aviles Hurtado. We talked about it a little bit, but obviously, this game against Mazatlan and the match against Toluca kind of show that if he's healthy, he still has something left in the tank. How much do you think they're going to count on him going forward? With these last couple, last three games, the Liguilla, how big of a impact do you expect Hurtado to have?
Probably not the biggest one, but with Babon coming back, I wouldn't say Aviles will be like a starter, but he'll definitely be part of the rotation. I think in any given game where you need opportunities up front, Aviles is a good option to have. But I wouldn't put him up from the beginning, probably. But it's good, like you said, when he's healthy, he has something to give. That's for sure. Like, that's nobody has ever, I don't think, questioned that. But the problem is his health. So if he keeps healthy like he's been recently and he plays and he creates chances or even scores goals, that's the Aviles Hurtado we want. I mean, he's a goal scorer. He's always been one. And maybe in the last moments of his career, now, especially this season, we've seen him more of a creator and more than a finisher. So it's good for him to be scoring goals, but I don't think that's the role probably Mohamed ambitions for him, like in the Liguilla.
Yeah. If he can be an option off the bench that can give you something, because we've kind of seen, the team is kind of struggling to create offensively. Goals aren't coming. You want someone that's going to come off the bench and impact and say, hey, I'm going to be able to create for you, at least create chances. So I'm hoping he can be that. Anything else from this game? Monterrey won 2-1. There was a little bit scary when Mazatlan made it, cut the lead in half. But again, won a game against a team that they should win. Obviously, I would like for it to be, I would like for them to win blowout wise and not have to worry about it. But still, 3 points is 3 points. Anything else in this match? I know we're trying to, for those who don't know, Pat has to broadcast an MLS game, so we're trying to shove everything in these next 40 minutes. I had to leave work a little bit early so we can record. Anything else you wanted to touch on from this match?
Not really. Good stuff from the guys we mentioned, and then good game from Nico Sanchez. I gotta say that for this one.
Yeah. So let's these last maybe 15, 20 minutes before you have to go. Let's talk about something that that was tweeted out last week, where it showed that Monterrey is the third among, you know, Liga MX clubs. I have the little graphic out, but they're the third most, if I'm not mistaken, with the most fans or
favorite.
Popular.
No,
just, I have it right here. Favorite soccer favorite. Teams
favorite.
In the U.S.
Favorite.
Yeah, favorite soccer teams, courtesy of Gilt Edge, at least. I think that's what it's pronounced.
Yeah. Gilt. Yeah, Gilt. But, you know, just favorite, but they don't necessarily point out factors. They do say something in the report like, we take this and this and this and this and this and this into consideration, but they don't show you the results of that, you know? But there's no TV ratings, I think. Yeah, there's no TV ratings. And then the
most
rest...
Most of the people that were complaining about this results. Were Chivas fans. Let's just point that out. Mostly because the LA Galaxy is in front of them. So they were complaining about it. And just to touch on that really quick, you know what? Maybe I think I just, you know, pie in the sky. They had Zlatan for, what, two seasons? If you're a soccer fan, you know who Zlatan is. There's going to be a lot of people bandwagoning on you. And like I said, I don't know if this is like social media interactions, TV ratings, or what they're taking into account. But when you have Zlatan, you're gonna bring in a lot of people who don't necessarily know who you are and what you're all about just because of that name. Maybe that will, you know, Zlatan left, what, almost a year ago? Maybe that will wear off. But you kind of, like, I thought about that, like, why they were ahead of Chivas, just because of that. But, that was mostly, like, the quote-unquote controversy for this list. But, Pat, unless you want to add something from that, let's talk about Monterrey. If somebody would have told you that Monterrey would be the third most, you know, the third club in Liga MX with the most, you know, that's their favorite club in the U.S., what would you have said? Because I was a little bit caught off guard in a good way.
Yeah, the same. I don't think anybody expected that. When I saw it, I was, like, confused about it and tried to kind of figure it out why. There's no explanation. Like I said, they just put the ranking and the results, but they don't tell you why some teams are more of a favorite team than others, if that makes sense. You know, they just put the graphic. So it's very weird to see Monterrey there, because obviously you always think about Cruz Azul and Pumas before, and then there's also like a big community of, well, Morelia, but now Morelia doesn't exist. I don't know if they take that into consideration, but Morelia is like a big team in the U.S. León is also a big team in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I guess Rayados in Texas kind of winning.
I always vision Monterrey more of as a region team like that.
Exactly.
South Texas, you know, area, mostly Monterrey fans. But I put out a thread, and I'll just sum it up really quickly. 2019 was really good to Monterrey. Like, they won the CONCACAF Champions League against Tigres, and obviously that's going to be front and center. It was on TUDN. Pretty much everybody that's Liga MX fan or whatever can watch that. And, you know, they played some quality MLS clubs, you know, especially, like, I'm mostly pointing towards Atlanta United, because, you know, they were, granted, they were under Frank De Boer at that point, but they were like the new it team, you know, for MLS, because they came off of winning the MLS Cup, and Monterrey kind of, you know, took care of business against them. But, you know, they're up in, you know, for ML, I guess, you know, a United States audience, up in front, you know, against two quality MLS clubs, winning that final against Tigres. And then you have, and I'll get to the America game in a bit, but you also have, like, they have a really good, I guess, TV contract with Fox Sports here in the U.S., where, yeah, you get it in Spanish with Fox Deportes, but you also get it in English on Fox Sports 1 or 2, depending, you know, where they put it. All their home games are in English, so it's easy access if you want to watch it. Like, it's... Like, for example, against Mazatlan, this game against Mazatlan, It was a lot of people didn't know where this game was being broadcast. And I feel like if they were still with TUDN, they would be third, not even third. I would think they would be like fourth or fifth on their depth chart. I think they would cater more to obviously America. You have Cruz Azul, maybe Pumas. So, and then maybe Monterrey. So Monterrey would probably be third, fourth, maybe fifth on that like depth chart of importance. Meanwhile, when you go to Fox, no offense to Santos or Cholos, but Monterrey is, you know, the better squad, spend money, good stadium. You know, they're the number one team, and they're treated as the number one team here. So I kind of like, you know, that they're with the TV partner that A gives you know, all their home games in Spanish and English, easy access. Aside from the World Series, that kind of, you know, they had to be pushed out by baseball for the first leg of the Copa Mekis. They're, like I said, they're on a channel where it's easy access. TUDN, they're on TUDN Extra, and a lot of people don't have that. So that I think that has to do with it. And then you have like the final against America. Obviously, America is the biggest club in Mexico, and they have like a large fan base in the United States as well. And what I think is that Monterrey, I've told you this before in the past, Pat, there's supporters who are, you know, they'll support, there are diehard fans of America, Chivas, whatever. But then there's the part that's like casual, like, okay, yes, I like Liga MX, I just don't have a team. And that's the type of fans that if I'm Monterrey, I'm trying to like gravitate towards me, just because, you know, like you're not going to have a family of already Chivas fans suddenly become Monterrey fans. Like, no, that's not going to happen. So you want to be able to bring people who don't necessarily have a team, or like they don't identify, maybe their family is this, you know, team. They support America, for example, but they don't really identify with America. So you kind of trying to grab that casual fan that likes the league but just doesn't have a team, and try to, you know, bring them towards you. And I think with the way you can easily watch their games. I think they do that. Obviously, against America, you're going to see a lot of people who want to see America lose, but probably don't know a lot about Monterrey, or maybe just know bits of it, of them. And, you know, with that win against America, they got really good exposure. And then you had the Club World Cup. I should have thrown the Club World Cup in there before the America game, because that happened like that. But you have that. Obviously, a lot of Liverpool fans in the United States. It helps that they put up, you know, a fight. You know, they lost, you know, I think, was it stoppage time that Roberto Firmino scored that goal? But you see, you playing really good against one of the top clubs in Europe, you know, that's going to draw some fans and make you say, well, who is this team? So I think all that combined kind of helped them to this point. At least that's just my opinion. I don't know if you have a different one, or if you want to add anything else to that.
No, I think, yeah. When you're doing well, I guess, in results, and also presenting your brand in a great way, doing great partnerships and all that, it's easier to be out there. I think even Rayados could be even higher up. They really could. Not because of of like fans that go crazy for Rayados in the US, but what you could bring to the table with the team you have. With Vincent Janssen being a little bit more internationally known, what you've done in the international state, like you said, the Club World Cup, you can really sell to other casual fans of the game of soccer that watch every single league throughout the day, and then at night they don't know what to watch. You show them a little bit of Rayados, and that's good what they're doing with Fox, because you also have them in English, so that's really great. But We all know they could be even higher, which is crazy to think, because that tells you that their Rayos is already up there with the big guys, but could also go way, way farther. So it's good to see that type of ranking.
Yeah. So and like I pointed out, for example, just before we wrap this up, like, you know, you start, you know, before the pandemic, you started something in Miami. you know, to try to, you know, bring the club's name out there in South Florida, where there is not a lot of Mexicans. There's Cubans and South Americans. And so stuff like they should like partner, like just have a friendly there. Like it doesn't cost you to have a friend. Like you can, for example, play a Colombian club there or whatever's like, you know, the most populated South American demographic and say, hey, you know, have you out, say, hey, we have, you know, an academy here. Or we want to, we're thinking about putting an academy here. Here's where you can, you know, they'll trot you out, whatever. And say, hey, you know, this is what they're doing. If you have, you know, just different things that you can do in a friendly, you know, it's more about friendlies, especially in the United States, about more about marketing and all that stuff. But yeah, it's just different things that they can do to improve. It's obviously not perfect, but you know, they can still make progress. It's good steps. It's good to see them there, but they can obviously be better, as you were saying. Couple notes, Pat. You had some notes, and then we have some questions to finish this podcast off before you have to run off and do an MLS broadcast.
Yeah, I have the questions ready if you want.
I know you had a note today that the club or the FIFA tweeted out. I don't know if you want to go which one do you want to go with?
Let me just say it first. Yeah, I'll say it first. So FIFA put out the a little ranking. I mean, it's not like news or anything, but it just, I guess nobody ever thought about searching about this stat, but they put out the stat where it says the teams with the most goals in the history of the Club World Cup competition. And there was first Real Madrid, second there was Barcelona, and third was Monterrey. And it was like by a few goals for the fourth team. So it's good to see, you know, FIFA, Club World Cup, Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Rayados. Like, that's a cool little feeling to have as a Rayados fan, which also goes to say that it's good to be internationally known. I mean, we all know Esperance Tunis just because of we watch the Club World Cup. Whether you're a fan of any team, you watch the Club World Cup, and you see all these Arabic teams that you already know just because they're always there. And that's the same thing with Rayados, but to those type of people. You know, we've seen on Twitter how there's a Qatari channel that always picks up on Rayados and the results in the Liga MX. So, you know, it just wanted to point that out. And hopefully Rayados keeps winning CONCACAF Champions League.
Yeah, especially now that the teams are going to 24. Like, it's not going to be small. You know, it's not going to be like a small number. It's going to be, you know, like a mini, like, not a mini World Cup, but it's, you know, quality amount of clubs that you know, that are exclusively only going to be there.
Yeah, exactly. So that was cool. I just wanted to mention that, and hopefully, we keep giving that importance to the competition. You know, like you said, it's going to be even bigger now. So hopefully, that continues. And if you want, I got the questions here. We got a really good amount of questions.
Yeah, go ahead. Fire them away.
Start. Yeah. So first one from Juan Quiñones or Quiñones Ruiz 2 at Quiñones Ruiz 2. Do you think Turco Mohamed will continue if he wins Copa MX, but not Liga MX? What do you think?
I mean, we talked about it last week where he gave his interview and he kind of sounded like someone that's not going to be, or that's like not feeling pressure. If you go back and watch his interview with Guncha, I don't know, maybe they have that quote, but there's one where it says he's comfortable at the club, like he's not feeling any type of pressure. And I don't know, I'm paraphrasing here. So I don't think he's going to leave. Now, is that what I want? No, but it's you know, that's what you just can't like. Fight the inevitable. You know, you can't fight the inevitable. You know, so I think he's going to stay there. So I'm going to say he stays. He's going to stay.
Yeah, I think I'll go with you as well. I think that's what's going to end up happening. So that was that. Let's go to the next one from at Arnulfo Salas. Just overall feeling of Jansen at Rayados. Will he remain until Turco, whether Turco stays, or will he, you know, continue?
Obviously, Funes Mori is not leaving, so they're gonna have to make a decision, because you can't. No offense, but you can't have like what they paid like $8 million for Akiloba, and then they paid like $10 million for Jansen. You can have one or the other. But you can't have two strikers, two backup strikers, that have a sum of. This is why I kind of feel like they're not very good negotiators. You can't have two, a second and third striker combine $20 million that you spent. Obviously, they're going to have to decide which one they're going to keep, because I think you can the third striker can be Platano Alvarado. He can be like that. He can do that. You can have Funes Mori and then just pick either Jansen or Akiloba. I'm not the biggest subscriber that Turco doesn't like Jansen, just because Jansen has a lot. He last week, as we said, he admitted that Jansen has had 5 or 6 injuries since, he took over last year around this time, and that, in 1 year to have 5, 6 injuries, 5 or 6 injuries, that's a lot. So, we'll see. I don't subscribe to that. I mean, Jansen was injury prone in Turkey. Jansen was injury prone while at Spurs. I don't know. Eventually, you're going to have to pick. You're going to go with the young player, or you're going to go with the player who has European experience, but he can give you a lot. There's no denying. He can give you really good stuff, but he's also injury prone. So people got to take a step back and take their fandom out. When you're doing business, you can't be doing business as a fan. So, in the end, they're just going to have to come down to choose between Jansen and Akiloba, just because if somebody can give you 7, 8, 9, and I know I'm doing this with COVID or COVID times, if somebody can give you 7, 8, 9, 10 million for either Jansen or Akiloba, you'd be tempted not to take it, because that can go towards helping improve another area of the squad.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Let's go to the next one, at Ricardo Serna. When Israel is going to put more attention on bringing players or young players from the academy with more quality? He says, I want Turco to tell us if they're going to play in the Liguilla so I can be prepared. I guess he doesn't like Platanos, Parras, and Cantu, and
yeah,
he also put and the son of the coach.
Yeah, you know what? I wish I can go back in time, and I kind of wish, maybe Pat, you can maybe have a better memory than I do, but I kind of want to wish, or I should say, I wish I can go back and read the opinions, and you're better at this, going back on people's tweets. What they thought of Cesar Montes, oof, here's this tall, lanky defender. Obviously, he has the size, but can he give you something else? So I don't know. You got to give some of these kids time. You can't judge them. You can't judge them right off the bat. Give them a few matches to see. I'd say give them 6, 7, 8 matches before you start forming an opinion, just because young players take time. I mean, how many people wanted Akiloba gone last year, or, in the early parts of this year, and now he's scoring goals and now people like him. So give the kids time and then, form your opinion maybe after next year. But what do you think?
No, yeah, I'm with you on that. Time is precious for the young guys when they're trying to have minutes, and especially in a league like Mexican League, where the opportunities are really, really short, because seasons end so long and you need your best players at all times. So when they get their minutes, it's always harder for them to really thrive. So I guess be patient. They'll come good, I think. And just to piggyback on that last one, at Diego 04 Guzman asks about other players for the future for Rayados. And I think we talked a little bit about those, Zapata, Shair Mohamed even, and then also Platano Alvarado. I think those are the future, because they're still got a ways to go.
Yeah. I think Platano Alvarado and Zapata can give you something. We'll just have to see. We'll have to see, like you said, because like a lot of the rules that they have kind of not defeat the purpose, but like it limits, you know, a club like Monterrey to maybe try to, or any club for that matter, try to like loan them out, try to allow them to get experience, because you kind of need them, because you got to have a certain amount of Mexicans on the squad. So you rather give, you know, your young players a chance, but still, how much can they develop by playing 20 minutes and then maybe two or three starts out of the season, you know, and there's no Copa MX this season. So, yeah, it is what it is. So we'll see what those, you know, three players can give us. But those are the three we're kind of high on.
Those are the three that look good. And then there's two more questions just to finish it off. At Rayada Legion, ¿qué buscar? Or is it in Spanish? What should we look for in the winter, in the, you know, transfer market in the winter? And who should leave? So who should come, but what should come, like a position, and then who, what player should leave? I guess we'll do. To do it a little faster, I guess we could do like a choose one position and one player to leave.
One player that I want to leave. Obviously, I think Aviles is leaving either way. I think his contract is up, right? They only extended him for another 6 months because of his injury. I don't know. I gotta look back on that, but I think he's gone. But other like a player that does like has a contract and I would like to see move on. Oh man, that's a difficult one. That's, you know, usually you can go to Rete Vizcaya or those players.
now it's
a little bit more tricky. I mean, again, I think it's like it's not because I don't like them, but because I don't think one of them is going to be happy being a third striker, and it's just going to have to be between Jansen and Aquiloba. One of them is going to have to go because they're going to want to go because they're going to want to start. Like, that's just depth chart wise, and that happens regardless. You can like three players, but one of them is going to have to go because one of them is going to want say, "Hey, where's my minutes?" You know. So I think either, and I know some people are going to say Dorlan Pavón, whatever, but I think he's here for, you know, a couple more years or whatever. And I don't think somebody's going to want to pay his wages. So I'm just like trying to be economical. I know a lot of people are going to say Dorlan Pavón, but me, I'm thinking more like player minutes wise. So, you know, Jansen's not going to be happy if he's third striker. And I'm pretty sure Aquiloba, now that he has his groove going, like if you asked him at the start of the season, maybe he won't say anything, but now that he has his he has some goals under his belt, he's going to say, "You know what? I'm scoring goals. I'm going to want more minutes." So I think one of those two is probably going to leave just because they're going to want to start, you know? So, yeah. I don't know. Who do you think?
I'll say, it's complicated. I'll say, Aviles, just because age wise, I think I like him a lot, but
his contract is up. Like, of course, no, like, but he's gonna go, but
no, but like, but I think that's a position we need to renew more urgently than others. Maybe center back, like Nico Sanchez leaving, and then get a center back, but
Or push Vegas in and get a and okay, we'll talk about that right now. We'll talk about it. That's another thing I wanted to talk about. Or the thing like additions. Like obviously they need a creative midfielder. Like that's not like I don't need to say that, but they kind of do need to know. Are they gonna keep Vegas at left back, or they're gonna move him to center back? Because then if not, then you're gonna need a center back. So they also got to realize is Gallardo a left back or is he like a winger? So those are like decisions they're going to have to like make eventually just because of the transfer market. But yeah, that's it. Like we'll get into all this like once the season ends in more detail, but yeah, those are like the things I'm keeping an eye on.
Yeah. And then the last question is from Cesar Brenda Monterrey or MTY. Do you guys think there'll be big changes in the Monterrey board, or not? I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, again, I'm going back to the interview with Turco. Is talking about how comfortable he is. Maybe next year, like maybe I mean, he's only here till 2021. So next year, like in the summer, if they haven't won the league, and then obviously they're gonna have the champions, you know, the CONCACAF champions next year. If they don't win one of the two, you know, tournaments and the Champions League, then yeah, I think maybe some changes. Because you should expect that. Like I'm not like that's not some crazy, you know, dreams or like demands I'm having, like with this lineup and the amount of team you're paying or the amount of money you're giving, you should expect that.
Yeah. So yep, that was it for the questions. I guess we'll go more into detail for those, or like for the, you know, the transfers and the board, but I think that was an overall little cool little recap, and especially to talk with the guys that you know listen to the podcast. But yeah.
Yeah, I think if that's it, Pat, where can people find you? I know you're going to do something right now on the broadcast, or you're going to be broadcasting like in maybe 17 minutes. So where can people find that? I know you had a podcast released today, and I follow your podcast and it showed up on my feed, on Spotify. So where can people find you on Twitter and like all the stuff that you're working on mostly when it comes to like MLS?
Yeah. Tsunami Picks on Twitter. I always put everything, but MLS at MLS Sin Muros, and then the podcast is called El Pedo con Picks, which is released to we did like a little like roundup on what the MLS has been and prior to the playoffs.
Obviously follow the Royals on any account. We are like under like, yeah, we're about like 150 away from like 4,000 followers, so you know, help us spread that word on that. We have two projects that we're working on. Rompas is working in the backgrounds, trying to land an interview with a certain Rayadas player. That's all I can say. We have a day. We're just trying to secure the time. And that's, again, that's all I can say.
Yeah.
And then, Pat, sure. I'm trying to ask you to talk to your coworkers about a Stefan Medina project that maybe we can release, you know, whether Stefan Medina plays for Colombia or not, the day before they play against Uruguay, because, you know, that was one of the national teams that kind of led to this, you know, bullying of him, and now a lot of people are kind of, you know, especially this last, you know, past, you know, South American qualifiers for the World Cup. Kind of, a lot of people are starting to realize that, you know, this dude's actually pretty good. Like, we should stop holding a game that happened 7 years ago when he was 21, 22 against them. So, we're hoping to get that. Because we can work on something else. Like, you know, yeah, I like recapping the game, but I also like talking to people. And I don't want it, like, to be time constrained. Like, I would like to, like, just for 1 hour talk Stefan Medina and his relationship with Colombia, and then have this interview that Rompas is trying to work on. So, you know, those are like really like exciting stuff that can break up, you know, the week to week, just recapping stuff and talking about that, just because, you know, I like to throw in something else, you know, once or twice a month, but yeah, those are, stuff that we're trying to put together. Hopefully they all plan out. But Pat, again, you have to go broadcast. I am going to go wait outside for my Postmates driver. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for following the Rayados 90 Twitter account. For Pat, I'm Eddie. Talk to you next week.